I'm Afshin Ratansi, and this is a special edition of Going Underground. John Pilger, one of the greatest journalists in history, is dead. Award-winning author of Hidden Agendas, Heroes, A Secret Country, of films, The War on Democracy, The Coming War on China, Palestine is Still the Issue, The War You Don't See. He exposed Washington Consensus imperial war crimes all around the world. In his last years, he campaigned tirelessly for Britain to release WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who he would never see free again after his torture in London. Condolences from the whole team here at Going Underground to his family. This is one of the last interviews he did for this show. In memoriam, John Pilger. John, thanks so much for coming on the show. You said Palestine is the issue in the last century and in this century. How does it link everything from war and peace, atrocities, imperialism, information to neoliberalism?
Well, Palestine is the centre of a great imperial act. I've made two films called Palestine is Still the Issue, 28 years apart. I may make another one. It'll be called Palestine is Still the Issue, because Palestine, unless we understand the atrocity being imposed on Palestine and the right of people to defend themselves, the right of people to resist against an external outside force, a force that it becomes more extreme by the moment, and I'm talking about Israel, then we'll never understand how the world works. There's been a whole attempt to make Hamas the central issue of the reporting, and that's nonsense, as if Hamas is a peculiar demon. In fact, Hamas and its military wing are part of a resistance that was provoked by the Israelis. The real demon in this is Israel, but it's not simply Israel. I mean, this is as much a British and American war against Palestine as it is an Israeli one. You know, just a few years ago, the chief of the defense staff in Britain, Sir Nick Carter, visited Israel, and between himself and senior Israeli strategist, they drew up basically a secret plan, a partnership, a military partnership between Israel and Britain. In fact, it goes much deeper than that. It's an integration of the two military forces, where you have Israelis being trained in ordnance design in Britain. Ordnance design is bombs. And British soldiers being trained with units that have been, as the IDF describes it, as Palestinian tested. So the integration of Britain, and especially the United States, which gives Israel $10 million a day, is complete. So it is, in one sense, it's a British, European, American war against the people of Palestine, who are doing one thing, and that is refusing, exercising their moral and legal right to resist a brutal occupation.
Britain says it's a friend of Israel. You know the two-sidesism that is mandated under broadcasting restrictions, as it were, here, because obviously when you're talking about atrocities, as we know, Israel says the responsibility lies with Hamas. It is using civilians as human shields among journalists, schools and homes, and they gave fair warning. And Dominic Raab, the foreign secretary here, says the UK condemns Hamas attacks on civilians and reaffirms Israel's right to self-defense.
Well, right, fine, Afshin, you had to say that, but there are not two sides. And actually, the very notion of two sides is obscene. It's like people looking up at German bombs during the Blitz and saying, but there's two sides here. You know, the Palestinians have crude rockets, and when they're accused of indiscriminate shelling, yes, the rockets are crude. But on the other hand, Israel is doing discriminate targeting. It's It's deliberately attacking, as it's always done, civilian targets. And we had the spectacle the other day of a high-rise building in which the media, almost all Palestinian, certainly non-Western media, we had the spectacle of this building being blown up by the Israelis with the nonsensical story that it was harbouring Hamas. It wasn't. And all those journalists there are witnesses to that. It's like the BBC reporter, Jeremy Bowen, who talks about a war between Israel and Hamas. Bowen knows that's wrong. It's an attack on an occupied people by the occupier, Israel, backed by great powers.
Do you think these journalists, you mentioned Jeremy Bowen, the Middle East editor of the state-mandated BBC, who had to apologise previously being pro-Palestine in his reporting, do you think they understand that firing stun grenades into the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the equivalent of Christmas Eve is like doing that to the Vatican on Christmas Eve? I mean, it was Eid al-Fitr. It's a bit like that, bombing the Vatican or sending the soldiers into the Vatican?
Well, if they don't know, what are they doing out there? I mean, you don't actually have to be in the Holy Land to understand that. The provocation, the attack on Palestinians and the attack on the holiest mosque in Islam was entirely unprovoked. And the fact that... And Hamas are warned... the Israelis, stop these attacks on our people in Jerusalem. Stop them now, or we will resist. And so they resisted, as every people has a right to do. The Western media, you know, where are they in Gaza? Yes, there are a lot of Palestinian journalists risking their lives, and Muslim journalists and Arabic-speaking journalists. But where are all the high-paid Western journalists? It looks to me like a boycott of Gaza.
You think there was a time when journalists were tried harder to get into Gaza? Obviously, the journalists are saying, they don't explicitly say, but it's Israel that actually prevents them and doesn't give them the passes. And I should say, Israel obviously says there were rocks at Al-Aqsa Mosque, and Israel says they give warnings, although that's disputed by some of the children who've seen their parents being killed.
Well, we know that. Israel is a lie machine, and has been proven to be that. But I think we do have to understand the responsibility in Britain. It had the responsibility of not only the present government, but the Labour Party is part of that. I mean, Starmer's Labour Party, which allowed pro-Israel groups to direct the policies of the Labour Party that, in effect, support this attack. When you have the shadow foreign secretary saying that to criticise Israeli atrocities is anti-Semitic, then we're in Lewis Carroll world, really.
The BBC had a piece after some of the atrocities in the past week saying, but why is it all these protesters, we saw that some of the largest protests in the world here in London, but I know they've been all around the world, why is it they don't protest about the Syrian government or against the, according to Western sources, genocide committed by China? I know we're going to talk about China in part two. Why are these protesters about Palestine at all?
Why don't they protest against anything? Why don't they protest to the Australian government about the genocide against the indigenous people? Why don't they protest to the US government about the dozens of countries that is overthrown and about the great numbers of people whose death it has caused and whose dispossession it has caused? It's a banal argument. People are protesting about an atrocity that is going on before our eyes, and we're allowed to see that atrocity because of some of the bravest journalists, and I know some of these people, photographers, cameramen, people whose building we saw blown up. In one of my films, The War You Don't See, there is a horrific sequence in which an Israeli sniper guns down a Palestinian cameraman who's lying wounded on the ground, and then they continue to shoot at his legs. He was then so seriously wounded, he probably wouldn't walk again. I mean, that's the kind of bravery that these people, in mostly Palestinians, I have to say, mostly Palestinians, the high-paid BBC people and others are just not there. Now, yes, it may be very difficult. The Israelis, whose domain they seem to cover very well, won't let them in. Why don't they get in, regardless?
There are indeed tunnels that they keep telling us about from Egypt. Congresswoman Tlaib in the United States, a Palestinian extraction, arguably fell into a trap trying to attack Hamas. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, this rising star in the Democrat Party, said that apartheid states are not democracies. Tony Blinken, someone who supported the destruction, certainly it ended up like that, of Africa's richest per capita country, Libya, said he wasn't convinced about the AP Al Jazeera building being full of Hamas operatives. Is it changing in the United States if it's not changing in London?
Is that a change? I don't know if it's a change. You know, Biden and Obama were... in 2014, during the last Israeli killing fest on Palestine, they were killing something like an average of 11 children a day. And yet Obama and Biden arranged the resupply of precision weapons to Israel. Biden is now the president. I don't see any difference. The only difference, the only resistance, is the resistance. That's what's different in this attack. There is a real resistance. And that should be matched by people going beyond their governments, beyond their parliaments, and going into the streets. That's the only way. Whether or not that succeeds, I don't know. But there is no other way.
You've suggested a link between those pictures of atrocities coming from Palestine and the British army and the British state. Has Israel, I know they've been accused of killing journalists in the past, borrowed from the NATO playbook when it famously blew up Belgrade TV in Yugoslavia in this destruction of the big tower in Gaza housing media organizations?
It's a lot more dangerous now than when I was a war correspondent, in particularly in Southeast Asia. Because now your side, that is the side representing the people whose newspaper or broadcasting organization sent you, are aiming for you. You're a target. But at the very least, these Palestinian cameramen and photographers and journalists, they are targets. But all journalists now are targets. Go into St. Bride's Church in London, into the corner that pays tribute to journalists who've died in covering wars, and there they are. The names are listed in the last few years that indicate the trend that the US in particular doesn't give a damn whether you're a journalist or whether you have a lanyard hanging around your neck that says journalist. You'll get shot. The Israelis, of course, not only don't give a damn, they don't even consider it. You'll get shot, period.
John, I'll stop you there. More from John Pilger after the break, when we discuss double standards from China to the torture of Julian Assange.
Just don't hold. And a new world is yet to shape out. Disdain becomes the etiquette, and engagement equals betrayal. When so many find themselves worlds apart, we choose to look for common ground.
Welcome back to part two of our special interview with John Pilger. In part one, we talked about the atrocities taking place in Gaza. The country currently holding the presidency of the UN Security Council is China, which failed to persuade Joe Biden to issue a resolution on the current slaughter of the People's Republic. Demonized by NATO is the subject of John Pilger's 2016 film, The Coming War on China.
This is the distinguished historian, Theodore H. White, an advisor to the White House, speaking in the 1960s.
Perhaps China is too vast to be governed by mercy. Yet if Chinese mind craves order, they must be brought to recognize they are the biggest factor in the world's disorder. And we must untangle the madness of their mind. The most difficult task in the world is to reach the minds of men who hate you.
What White was really complaining about was the loss of a China that the imperial West could dominate.
A clip from John Pilger's The Coming War on China there as Boris Johnson deploys Britain's HMS Elizabeth aircraft carrier to confront China. I'm still here with John Pilger, who joins me from Sydney in Australia. Well, if Israel is Britain's strategic military partner, we're told in NATO nation media day after day that our enemies to our national security are Russia and China. China holding the rotating presidency of the UN Security Council. You said the coming war on China. How have you noticed the difference here as regards Palestine, with China apparently trying to force the issue with a statement from the UN Security Council to call for a ceasefire against the wishes of the United States?
The whole campaign against China and the campaign against Palestine are one and the same thing. It is about control. It is about imperial powers at a certain time in their history threatened. They feel threatened. They're not actually threatened. They're threatened in economic terms, in that they may their economic prosperity is receding. But so in order to correct this, they're playing with the prospect of war. It's a terribly dangerous game. When I made The Coming War Against China, and that was in 2016, I wrote that title almost as a provocation. If I was doing that film now, I would say it's a reality. In a few short years, China, from being in many senses a strategic ally of the West, certainly in the so-called war against terrorism, it was. In its relationship over trade and currencies, this was a peaceful relationship. And it changed with the so-called pivot to Asia. And what we have now is, which is never reported, and this is very important, because it's basically a psyops war, a propaganda war. There are 400 active bases surrounding China, US bases. They start here in Australia with probably one of the most important at Pine Gap, all the way up through the Philippines, Thailand, Korea, and Japan, so that we have bases now which are primed for nuclear attack in Okinawa and in Korea, pointed at China, something like 500 or 600 miles away. That's the kind of provocation that we're living with day by day. Now, that's almost never news. That is the dangerous stage that we're in, leaving us in a stage when there could be mistake or accident, and it becomes a nuclear war. China doesn't, in military terms, China doesn't threaten anybody. It's made it very clear that what it's interested in is business, in trading, in development, in making its own people prosperous in a way that they've never known. You, when you're in China, you have history is like a presence. The history of China right through the 19th century as a colonial, impoverished servant of the West. They feel that. They call it the century of humiliation. That's over. And it's over in a very spectacular way, because China has risen to the point where anything the West can do, it can do, and often do it better. Almost half of all the Chinese COVID vaccine is going to other countries. That's indicative of China's development policies. This is the beginning of a world based on development. It's not, you know, that doesn't mean to say that a great power itself doesn't have present difficulties for all of us, but the difficulties are much diminished if that great power is not a military aggressor. There's only one military aggressor in the world, and that is the US, backed by the UK, backed by its vassal state Australia. And the reason for that is that the US has realized it's losing its economic dominance. But what it does have, or it thinks it has, is military dominance. It's a very dangerous time.
Well, you know the news here that we get. I mean, Human Rights Watch, Amnesty calling claims of human rights abuses in Xinjiang true. We hear news every day about the oppression of oligarchs, actually, in Hong Kong. Britain upgrading its nuclear weapons and has sent HMS Elizabeth. It's the Black Sea protecting us from Russia, and it's headed for the South China Sea. What do you think goes through the minds of the soldiers on board HMS Elizabeth II and Boris Johnson here when he sends our aircraft carrier there during a pandemic?
Well, they will have been told a story, and they can hardly be blamed for what is going through their minds, frankly, with an aircraft carrier that has cost billions and whose aircraft are by courtesy of the United States, and those aircraft don't work very well anyway. It would be, in a very black sense, it would be funny if it wasn't so serious. There's no reason to confront China in the South China Sea. Most of the stories out of Xinjiang about the Uyghurs are out-and-out propaganda without evidence. Without evidence. In fact, in Xinjiang, there was a problem with the I think it's the, what was it called, the East Turkestan Freedom Movement, which the US State Department described as one of the most extreme terrorist organizations. So China had a terrorism problem in that province. Whether or not China has been able, and a secessionist problem, the same that the Soviet Union has had and many other countries have had. But there is no evidence whatsoever that there is the kind of suffering that has worthy of the description genocide. That term genocide, I should remind you, came from the lips of Mike Pompeo, who described himself as a liar. And most of the so-called evidence has come from a researcher now associated with the Jamestown Foundation in Washington called Adrian Zenz. If you look at Zenz's, all his so-called documentation, it's documentation used by Amnesty and many others, it's fraudulent.
He denies that. Obviously, we do invite him on the program, and people can see our interview with a Uyghur council person on the show on our YouTube channel. I mean, you mentioned earlier about these bases around China. I mean, obviously, track and trace over COVID is a problem here in Britain. We don't seem to be able to track and trace coronavirus infection, but there seems to be a large number of bases that are tracking and tracing all our every... moves. Just tell me what Pine Gap is.
Well, Pine Gap was set up by the CIA. It's near Alice Springs. It was set up in late 1960s. For many years, it was denied. Australian government denied that it was an American base. They described it as a shared facility. It wasn't anything of the kind. It's a completely American-run facility with Australian employers. But as the Australian intelligence and US intelligence is completely integrated, that's not a problem. It's certainly one of the most important bases in the world. And Edward Snowden, in his released document, showed it to be a base that spied right across Asia, right across China, right across Russia, a major spy operation, not a defensive operation, a spy operation. So at the moment, it probably is the major spy base on China, and all the other imagined enemies of the United States.
And it was, of course, Julian Assange who helped Snowden avoid the clutches of the United States, perhaps torture. Just very quickly, what have you heard about what is happening in the Assange case? Biden doubling down, it seems, on 175 years for the world's most famous journalist.
There was some wishful thinking for a while that the Biden administration may not carry on Trump's pursuit of Julian Assange. It is, and it's now heading for the High Court in London, where it'll probably happen in the autumn, perhaps September, October, in which the High Court will decide whether there is any credibility in the US appealing against this decision to let Julian go. My own sense is, and I feel slightly nervous at making this prediction, is that Julian will be set free. I certainly hope so, because he embodies the very resistance that we've been talking about in this program. It's the resistance of information, of transparency, of a whole moral purpose, of resisting the forces of oppression. Julian himself and his case exemplifies that. That's why what happens to him is so important to all of us.
John Pilger there, and this has been a special tribute to John Pilger, who has died. Condolences again to his family and all his friends and comrades. See you soon.